Good evening. This is K2BAR for the Bergen Amateur Radio Technical Net. Any station with emergency or priority traffic, please call K2BAR. West Italy, nothing is heard, and it is a fine evening tonight. It is, the 19th of July, 2007. This is Gordon, W2, Tango, 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 your net control for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Any station who wishes to check in may check in with a question, a comment, or with no question. You need not be a member. The purpose of this net is to discuss any technical topic related to amateur radio in any area of interest to you. We welcome any subject within good taste and reason. So, at this time, I would ask the stations check in with their call sign, their name, and whether or not they have a question, a comment, or none of the above. At this time, stations with W's, please call. WI2W, Steve. Okay, Steve, do you have a question?
I do not. I might have one later.
Acknowledge any other stations with prefix of W. Please call K2BAR. Okay, let me, I'm hearing a ka-chunk, and I'm wondering if there's a station trying to get in. You need a tone of 141.3, 141.3, or 4A is the Motorola code, for accessing this repeater. Any stations with W, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is W4DSA, Daniel, in New York City.
Daniel, good evening, W4DSA. Do you have a question?
No question at this time, just checking in.
Splendid, thank you very much. Any stations with November as a prefix, please call K2BAR.
N3CRP, Charlie. After the questions, I've got a comment with, a topic.
Very good, Charlie. N3CRT, we got you with your comment / topic. Anybody else with a November call, please call. K2BAR.
This is NS2K, Jim. No question at this point.
Jim, good evening. NS2K, K2BAR. Anybody else?
NJ1W, Dave. No questions.
J1W acknowledged. Good to hear you, Dave. Anybody else? Okay, Alpha calls, please call K2BAR. And last but not least, Kilo calls. Any station beginning with Kilo, please call K2BAR.
Kilo Charlie 2 Alpha Whiskey X-Ray. Name's Harvey in beautiful Verlon, New Jersey.
And Harvey, do you have a question?
I got a bag full of questions, but I can't get the bag open right now. So I'll just let it slide and let someone else ask.
There's a joke in there somewhere, but I'm not touching it. Okay. I think that was the joke, but anyway. Any other stations with a Kilo call, please call K2BAR.
K2AMI, Tony.
Peter, I have a question.
Tony, I heard you, and Peter, I heard you as well. K2AMI, Tony, do you have a question?
No questions, just big question. Am I getting into the repeater with this tone? I had to change my tone.
Q5, no problem.
No other questions.
Okay, thank you very much. And KC2QIM, Peter, I hear you, but you're really noisy. Can you improve your signal in some way? And I think you do have a question. Is that correct?
Yes, I do have a question. How's my copy now? Over.
Significantly better, not great, but good enough. That would work. If you can continue with that level of signal performance, it'll be fine. Noted, you have a question. Anybody else? Okay. Any any other Kilo stations or any other stations at this time, please call K2BAR for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net.
KO2, okay.
Kay Bennett, I have you. Do you have a question?
Sorry, just turned on the radio, so you're calling for K's. I'm late checking.
No, you're fine. And there was another station underneath you. Who was that?
This is WB2HID.
WB2HID. Hi, Gene. Do you have a question or a comment?
No, just monitoring the net.
Okay, very fine. Last call before we go on to the question and from Peter, and then we'll get any other questions and then Charlie's comment or topic. Any other stations wishing to call into the net, you need not be a member, please call K2BAR. Wow, there are 11 of us here. That's pretty good. Those are the ones who signed in and admitted to being here. That's excellent. I want to thank the stations who took the time and trouble to sign in, and also everybody, thank everybody else for being patient during the sign-in. One of the reasons why I solicited rather strongly for check-ins to this net is that very often people have certain expertise, and if we know it's available on frequency, we can defer to that expertise as needed in response to the question. So, again, I want to thank everyone for being patient for checking in and also patient listening to the check-in process. Again, my call is W2TTT, Whiskey 2 Tango, Tango, Tango. My name is Gordon, and I'm your net control for the evening. At this time, I would like to turn it over to KC2QIM for his question. Peter, good evening.
K2BAR, KC2QIM, good evening to everybody. Good evening, Gordon. My question is really about ferrite core beads. I've got some, it seems like RF problems on my ICOM rig for high frequency. I use an MFET wire, etc., the antenna, and I try to ground it or counterpoise it. And I'm trying to find out what's the best way to apply ferrite core beads. That's number one. Number two, if I can harvest them rather inexpensively from old computers, I do have access to the Tenafly dump, and they have a lot of electronic equipment that people get rid of, and I know the guy over there, and he let me harvest anything I need, I think, from the area, and I'm just wondering if I could find the ferrite core beads amongst those old computers. And not knowing much about them, I understand they come in halves, so there was they can fit around wires because the way they're wrapped, they have some kind of tape, and they just basically come apart in halves. So I just want some advice on that. That's it.
Well, okay. Let's understand what you're trying to do for anyone who might not know. Your plan is to either encapsulate for some length of a lead. The leads of your perhaps power or control lines, not your antenna, but maybe even power and control leads, maybe even the antennas of other devices such as receivers like coax, and you want to wrap it around those things so as to stop RF from flowing into the device or out of the device, as the case may be. You could certainly do what you're planning to do in order to obtain such devices for peanuts, or if you will, nothing. Maybe buy the guy a coffee. But different ferrites have different permeabilities that will, you know, provide the desired effect at a variety of frequencies. So I guess, you would have some luck with the stuff that they've been putting on keyboards and perhaps video lines and things like that. You could cut those open, snap the two halves around a coax, a control lead, power lead, etc., and then just tape it on temporarily. If that works, then you could use heat shrink tubing to make it work. I think the one thing that you're going to get into trouble with, potentially, is lack of effectiveness because of the incorrect permeability of the material in question for the frequency you're trying to suppress. But I think it's a worthwhile endeavor nonetheless. Any other comments from anybody else on this? Please call K2BAR.
Just for information, I'm trying to actually suppress any RF that may be coming from the rig or to the power supply that's been creating heat on the negative black DC lead from the power supply to my rig, which has been blowing my fuses.
Would certainly be worth a shot. You can put several on there. I would put it as close to the power supply as possible, as close to the radio as possible. I'd put it on both ends. Jim, what do you think? NS2K, you're pretty good about these matters. K2BAR.
K2BAR, NS2K. Yeah, I tend to agree. You pretty well got it on the money. There are obviously several commercial mixes available, and each one tends to have a frequency range that it's best at. And, of course, different materials altogether. You'll find powdered iron, and you'll find ferrite and a couple of other different things. And each has its advantages or disadvantages for any given use. The ones I suspect on the keyboards and video leads probably are good for rather low frequencies. I suspect they'd probably do best getting stuff out of AM radios and the low end of the HF range. I haven't actually looked to see what their range is, but that would be a suspicion at least. I know there are ferrites available. I happen to have some if you need some. I managed to buy some at an auction or Hamfest or wherever it was, a fairly good number of them, very inexpensively. So if you would like something, if you're coming over to Fairlawn or whatever in the near future, like maybe tomorrow, I might have to remember to bring some over with me. But I think those were Mix 43, which are generally good around the HF band, NS2K.
Very, very fine. Peter, any other comments from you? And after you, maybe anybody else wants to chime in. Please call K2BAR.
Yeah, final comment. Jim, we'll stay in touch with each other on that. I won't be able to get the Fairlawn tomorrow, but I'm interested. And I guess how many ferrite core beads would I have to put on each side? Yes, I think I would experiment by putting it on as close to the cable on the power supply and as close to the point that the DC cord goes into the rig. How many ferrite cores would I need to put on each side? Just one's enough or more than that?
I would think many, but I would put it on both sides of your DC lead as well as both sides of your AC lead.
Comment. I'd probably put, you'd want to do them probably in a common mode. So you'd go run the wire, both sides of the wire through the lead, same ferrite. And incidentally, the ones that I have the quantity of have about a quarter inch ID, and they do not split. So they're good for, like an RG8 size wire. But if there's already a connector on the end, that's a problem. And it's okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it on the coax. It's just for the DC and AC leads, like you said.
Comment. Yes,
excuse me as I clear my throat. You may wonder about what the source of the RF is coming from, and it's probably coming from the coax cable, even though it's manifesting itself on the DC lead. Now, where is the RF coming from? In that case, you may not rule out putting ferrites on the coax, and I think at HF, and this was covered not too long ago, I think on the actually the amps reflector, if you have access to that, eight snap-on beads, or I guess Jim, you said yours don't snap, but you power, at least for the power, you can stick them through the hole, and otherwise you may have a little bit of an issue if it's coax, but I wouldn't rule out the coax. The RF is coming from somewhere, and it's got to be the coax that's feeding back as feedback from your antenna. So don't rule out coax. That's just a comment. KO2, okay.
Anybody else? Peter, any comments from you?
Well, I would say I should put ferrite beads on every wire I've got in the place, including my lamps.
I think that's the consensus from the conversation.
It's probably a good thing to do. Jim, I'll take a gross, okay? Anyway, thank you very much for everybody's input. Let me chew on this for a while during the net. KC2QIM.
Okay, very fine. By the way, I'm hearing the guys on the input and the output of the Vernon machine. It's amazing. Okay. And that's on a vertical. It's on my house. Alrighty. Well, that's a very good thing. You know, your continuous adventures of the random wire are bound to cause you much grief. And if you're starting off with a piece of coax, you might wish to, you know, think about putting up some form of dipole, even one that's not center fed, you know, offset fed dipole of some sort, or even an L of some sort, where you have some sort of counterpoise wire on one side of one or more lengths, and then the random wire on the other. That might help you resolve your RF in the shack issue a whole lot less painfully, Peter. Just something to think about. Any more from you?
Yes, and actually on that note, WB2GAI, Ron is coming over one day this weekend. I got to, you know, confirm with him. And we're going to do some testing. He's going to bring some of his test equipment. We're going to do some real estate assessment here about what can be erected, what can't, that sort of thing. And so we're going to have finally a visit from the doctor, the good doctor, and figure out where we go from there. But thank you very much, everybody, and everything is well taken.
I'll just say this, if I had your trees, a guy with a bow and arrow and about 400 feet or 500 feet of my parachute cord and about 1,000 feet of wire and about a dozen egg insulators would magically, and some coax would be magically awaiting his arrival, that would just be my tack on the matter. But okay. Well, good luck on that. That's excellent. Okay. Before we start on our topic, which N3CRT is going to pursue a bit, I was wondering if anyone had any other questions for the net. Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, KF2ID.
Good evening, Ben. KF2ID. K2BAR. Good evening to you. Any comments or questions?
Yeah, I got a minor question. I managed to pick up a paddle, code paddle, a key, at the Sussex Ham Fest. It was a Vibroplex. Not the type that vibrates, but just a plain ordinary. It's such a pretty looking thing. So I decided to try it out on my transceiver. And I always wondered about the keying paddles. Is there a standard or generally accepted way? Do you put the dits on one side or the dash and the dashes on the other, or vice versa? The dishes on the left or the dashes on the right, or the dashes on the right or the dishes on the left? Obviously, any operator could do what he wants, but I'm just curious in general if there's any sort of standards like that. Acceptable, you know, that people generally do, or commercial equipment. When you buy a Kia, does it always end up always one way? KF2ID.
I may stand corrected, but I seem to, and I've just taken my paddles off because I was playing with something else, but I seem to recall that dips are on the left and the dots are on the right. Is that right? Let's see, who can help me out with that one? NJ1W, what do you think? K2BAR. Okay, somebody else bail me out here?
K2BAR, this is NJ1W. That's the way I have it. I think it's pretty much standard, but it's preference, too, because some people might use their left hand and write with their right hand, and they might want to reverse it. So, it's, you know, it's it's up to the individual. So if you want to do it the standard way, I think that would be the way, dits on the left and dots on the right. And so if you ever go into someone else's station, you're more likely to be comfortable with their equipment if you're going to use it. Chances are it'll be the same. So, but it's still preference. You know, you can do whatever you like. Back to that.
W2JEK with a comment.
Okay, now we're going to get into religious discussions. Go ahead, Don.
W2AKR, repeater.
Okay, as far as that goes, I think most of the what I'm reading here is I have the latest issue of World Radio, and they had a survey out on who does what. Right, that use the right finger, that's with the index finger, or that's with the thumb, or in other words, you copy with the left and send with the left, you copy with the right and send with the right, but generally the biggest number, most of them said that's with the thumb. Now that's just like the old Vibraplex bug key came out before, back in the 1900s, the original Vibraplex bug key. You press the key to the right with your thumb and it sent out a string of dits. And of course you had to make the dials manually. But I think a lot of these start that way. Of course you can do anything to suit yourself. And then again, if you're left-handed, you can set it up to suit yourself, I guess. There's no real standard. It's a total of 62 people in this survey, and I think 25 of them generally did the dits with the thumb. So the way this is broken down, over.
Comment.
Comment, go.
KC2QIM. I set up a Kent iambic paddle for my ICOM, and the wiring schema for paddle was basically preferring thumb for a dit and the index finger for a dash. So I think of dots and dashes from left to right. So my left thumb, or my actually right, even on my right hand, the thumb when it's fixed to the paddle is on the left side, my index finger on the right, so that seems to be the consensus between.
Okay, well I think we have a consensus on this one. Anybody else?
WI2W.
Okay, Steve.
I like dips on the left, dawes on the right. And of course when you go into somebody else's shack and the paddle's wired differently, I just turn the paddle around and put my hand over top of it and operate that way. Look good, work fine, last a long time.
Okay, very fine. I think that we have consensus here. Anybody do something differently and why?
NJ1W, most keyers will let you reverse, vetting for reversing. So that on the Elecraft K2, I don't have to change the wiring on the paddle. I can just go in and change the programming for the keyer.
Yeah, and that's what I do as well, if I need to. Sometimes I'll do it, I try to play with sending with my left hand, as several of you, Dave and Don in particular, I think, mentioned. But I'm a long way from being able to send reliably with my left hand. Very good. Any further comments before we move on? This is a good topic.
I use a straight key, and that eliminates all the problems.
Well, I said I'm doing that too. Anybody else?
Does amazing things with a straight key, as witnessed by our by his operating at field day. It was a pleasure to watch operate. Thanks, Don.
Thank you. Yeah, if I could copy and we're operate CW the way Don, Jerry, and Steve Mendelson operate in a fractional mode, I'd be a happy boy. Okay, very fine. Well, let's move on. This is a very good topic. Any other questions for that before we move on to the topic at hand? Okay, any late check-ins, please call KTBAR for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association TechNet. Excellent. Okay, well, this evening we do have a topic, and we're going to spend probably about 15, 20 minutes on it at this point, looking at the clock and realizing people do have some nighttime issues. And N3CRT,
November 3, Charlie Romeo Tango Charlie, is going to talk about his rotator control. He's going to describe his rotator, his control circuitry, why he picked what he did, how much fun it was to build, how he drives it with software, and he'll take any questions. Following that, we're going to have a little simplex exercise, which I'll repeat here for people on 7-9, but basically I'm going to take a list here of those who want to run a simplex test and then a sideband test here on 2 meters. And then what I will do is I will actually call you one by one on a simplex frequency to be designated, or a sideband signal frequency, pardon me, to be designated. And you'll just go in turn, and I'll retransmit that whole dialogue back onto the repeater for those who couldn't join us. But the idea is for then we'll all come back here on the repeater, and you'll be able to tell me and everybody else who you heard among you. I'll just call a quick roll call. I'll go bang, 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 and we'll just call the stations who signed up to do that, and then we'll come back on the repeater, and you're going to tell me who you heard and how well you heard them. Purpose of that exercise is going to be to kind of encourage people to improve the quality of their antennas, to detect any changes in their antennas, etc., because, of course, many of us leave our 2-meter antenna sitting on a repeater all day, and, you know, we've got all sorts of hardware in the air to talk to a wet noodle, a repeater at the other end of a wet noodle, as it were. So it's not a big deal to communicate to that. So we might find out that we have some signal degradation, or with some enhancements we can make our signal a whole lot better on simplex or on, heaven forbid, 2-meter sideband. So we'll get to that. N3CRT, Charlie, it is your show, K2BAR.
K2BAR and the group, this is N3CRT. Hey, I got some stuff to share with you guys. And I'm pretty new at this, but I'm pretty excited that I actually got it working. It's kind of cool. I'm just getting into, like, amateur satellites. I've made a couple contacts. Actually, they were all on a Fuji Oscar 29, which is now kind of in a state of limbo. I think they're trying to recover it, and we'll have to see what happens. If you've ever seen anyone do the satellites with, like, especially on a linear transponder, you almost need three arms to do it and a foot. You're steering the antenna with one hand, and you're trying to tune with the other, and then you're trying to talk with the other. So really, you need three hands. And so I immediately began to look at the options of steering an antenna with a rotor. So let me just check here, make sure I am making the repeater fine. Gordon, am I in there good?
Right, just about every two and a half minutes, unkey, and just drop it for about 3 seconds or 4 seconds, okay?
Okay, so, like I was saying, let me start off here by saying, I started writing during the first part of the net some notes that you guys can kind of follow along. If you're near a computer and you want to load up my website here, I'll give you a second to get a piece of paper and a pencil, or get to the computer, whatever. It's www.n3crt, like my call, n3crt.net/technet, just T-E-C-H-N-E-T, and hit enter, and it'll load the index file there. And it's pretty ugly, but it'll help you follow along, maybe a little bit, give you some links. So basically, I've got an ICOM 910, and I started with the three-hand approach, trying to steer and point with my little aero antenna, and I talked to my wife, and I got approval to buy a Yaesu G5500. So, you know, that's a little bit of a chunk of change just to steer an antenna, but hey, we got to do what we got to do. So then my mind immediately began thinking of, you know, I've got this thing that'll steer me through the sky. What can I do to control it? I started looking at all the different rotor interfaces, and I was seeing that I think even the cheapest one that comes in kit form is like $200, so I was like, that's kind of out.
I'm loving this.
So, good here. So I'm thinking, you know, I've got to be able to do this cheaper. So I start digging up, and I've used the different software. I've used SAP PC 32, I've used Instant Track, I've used Nova, and Nova, the people who make Nova, Northern Lights Software Association, used to have a little board that they would sell, a kit. And, you know, you'd buy this kit, it was pretty cheap, and you could attach it to your lap jack. And lap jack is this 99, well, that version, the U12, is a little more expensive, it's like $120. But this new version is the USB version, plugs right into your computer, and it's an experimenter's box. It'll read in and out digital and analog inputs through like these screw binding posts on the side. It's pretty cool. You can use it to read anything. They even sell modules on their website so you can like measure temperature and, you know, anything you want to do. You can hook up thermocouples to it, and you can even design your own kit to you know, put an input voltage so you can read it with software. If you're good at writing like C software, you can get something going. You can hook up a little microcontroller to turn your air conditioner on before you get home or whatever, write a program for it. It's pretty cool. So basically this board that the Northern Light Software Association used to sell was a little array of transistors on a single chip that would steer the input and the output kind of the control box. And the control box has a plug in the back of it, so you can hook, you know, you can hook it. It's an 8-pin DIN connector, so it's pretty easy to hook up. You don't have to go open the control box, drill a hole for some extra wires, and kind of hack it open. But it plugs right in. And I found on this guy's website, the guy that actually, I think he wrote SAP PC32, his call is DK1TB, Delta Kilo 1 Tango Bravo. And I subscribe to the AMSAT net, or the AMSAT bulletin board, and I get the email, so it's kind of nice to be able to talk back and forth and email back and forth and hear all sorts of different information on the list. So basically I got his circuit, and I built it on a piece of Radio Shack perf board, and by golly, you know, with a little bit of tweaking and tuning here, it works. So it's pretty cheap. Gordon, I think he said he has a 5400. I think it'll also do the same thing with a 5400. And it's pretty simple to steer your rotor through the sky without spending, you know, $200-$300 or more. You can do it for about $100 and maybe $10 if you're buying all these parts. It's 7 Darlington transistors in an array that support up to 500 milliamps. And you do little 4 indicator LEDs just so you can tell that it's steering up, right, left, and up and down, left and right. And that's just kind of your eye in the shack that, yes, my board is working and it should be telling my rotor to do what it's doing. And you use the lap jack to get the feedback out of the rotor, and the software reads it and steers your antenna across the sky. So it's pretty amazing. Anybody have any questions?
Questions?
Go ahead, this is N3CRT.
Charlie, what was your website again? I missed that.
Okay, this page that I have listed isn't linked from my main page, but it's N3CRT.net, and then to get to the little note page I made here, it's /technet, just T-E-C-H-N-E-T, with a /, just like a folder.
Got it, thanks.
Okay, anybody else have a question or a comment?
Go ahead. Okay, Charlie, continue, go ahead.
Well, I don't really have anything more. I just wanted to give a kind of a brief rundown, and I'm going to try to get a picture of it. I have it laying here on my living room floor. I'll hook it up, make it kind of look kind of nice. I do avionics at work, so all the wires are white. Actually, in this case, my little hookup wire from the Radio Shack is all black, so it's only like 10 wires maybe, and I don't get confused with just 10 wires because I deal with hundreds of wires at work. So it looks like a little bit of a rat's nest, but for now it's just for testing purposes. It's kind of I was planning on getting it made up onto a circuit board. I think we had recently on EHAM or ARRL an article about how to get cheap circuit boards made, and I actually got my latest issue of Nuts and Volts, and I saw in the back there a board house that you download their software and you draw the circuit and you do the logical connections, and it'll route the traces for you. So it's pretty neat little program.
I'll tell you what, if you could add a URL to that, if that's possible, or, you know, maybe scan the picture and make it available on your website, that'd be excellent. The LabJack website's fascinating, I'll tell you that right now. I've been reading that, and it's really, you've done a fantastic job here tonight. I really look forward to the day when we get into some sort of interactive multimedia mode, and I think we have crossed the Rubicon. However, tentatively, I think we're there. I'm the owner of a 5400, and I have a junior tracker, which, of course, you know, has the Yaesu controller interface, that same DIN plug, and then the other is a serial port. But as you noted, that there are fewer and fewer of those kicking around, so maybe in the future I'll consider one of these LabJack boards and your simple circuit. This is rather fascinating, I must say. So go ahead and embellish it and email me the final URL name. You don't have to make it TechNet, but whatever you decide for the URL is fine. And we'll include that in our net report, and it'll be referenced in the Barra Bulletin next month or the month after, I'm sure. So thank you again, Charlie, for doing this, and I think it'd be an ideal thing if it could be a little more tidy for a kit night type of thing. I'm sure people would be interested in adapting it to things like ham M's and ham 3s and 4s, since that's a common rotator, a little more common than the ASUS, but certainly the ASU has a lot of functionality. I have the little brother to what you have, the 5400, as I said. So, are there any other questions for the net?
Comments?
Please.
Nice job, Charlie. Sounds like you're well on your way here. It looks like you've made some real good progress. Couple comments. Charlie mentioned AMSAT. www.amsat.org is a wonderful place if you're interested in satellites. And if you're really interested in satellites, you might consider joining up and supporting their efforts, because AMSAT's out there looking out for us, building and launching satellites, dealing with international regulations, and all sorts of good stuff. So AMSAT's worth supporting. Along those lines, Charlie mentioned SAT-PC-32, which is a program by Eric Eichmann, DK1TV, which is my favorite satellite program, and I've tried a good number of them. Started out with NOVA, went through a couple, and ended up with SAT-PC-32, which does the full Doppler control that Charlie mentioned earlier. And what that program does is, as the satellite is coming towards you and then moving away from you, it dynamically adjusts your uplink frequency and your downlink frequency simultaneously to keep the frequency at the moving satellite constant. And if the other station is doing the same thing, and that's called full Doppler control, you can actually have a conversation from acquisition of signal, AOS, to loss of signal, LOS, without touching the tuning dial. If you're off 50 or 100 hertz, you can use the plus minus keys on your keyboard to correct it in real time. It's a marvelous program, and what's even better than that is Eric has graciously donated 100% of the proceeds to handset. He constantly upgrades the program, doesn't take a penny for his efforts. He's an active participant on the bulletin board. It's a great piece of software. I'll let it drop. And I guess the last thing, now that you've got the rotator set up, Charlie, you're going to need antennas. And my favorite antennas have been the Cheap Yagi series of antennas by Kent Britton, WA5VJB. He has a website, WA5VJB.com, and he has a reference section on the website. You'll find all of his information about his Cheap Yagis there. Very simple to make. They work great. You don't need circular polarization for these low Earth orbiters. In fact, it's more of a hindrance than a help because the low Earth orbiters change their polarization several times during a pass. So if you have circularly polarized the antennas, you've got to be flipping the switch back and forth to follow it. Because they're close to Earth, they don't need much antenna. 3, 4, or 5 elements works great. And these Cheap Yagis are a real easy ticket. So if you're looking for a low-budget way to get some antennas on top of that rotator, I strongly recommend them. And I'd be glad to help anybody that started there with those. And that's about it. K2BARWI2W. Nice job, Charlie.
Thanks, Steve. I played a little bit with it, with the Doppler tuning. Couldn't get it quite to work. I had posted something to the list a long while back, but they had mentioned something about the timing, and I was using a kind of a homebrew interface for my ICOM here. So I actually have the Rig Blaster plug and play now, which is, it's got that controller internally. So maybe I can go completely USB and get this thing going, but when I'll be looking at that guy's website, WA5VJB, for some antennas. Thanks. This is N3CRT.
Okay. Very fine. At least you have it. Okay. Couple things. Anybody else have any comments they want to make to Charlie, and then I'm going to make my comment on this, and then we'll go to the next phase. KO2, okay with a comment? Okay, Ben.
Charlie, I think you mentioned about the computer programming aspect of it. This is programming a chip, or this is a program to run everything you have, and therein, is it? Do you need to know programming, or once it's set up, you don't need to know programming? I mean, can it be prepared and done with, or do you actually need to know programming? So. Back to you, Charlie.
Basically, SAPPC32, it runs on Windows, people have written for it, either the people that have the different kind of trackers, like I think Gordon said he had a Tracker Junior, there's the Las Vegas Boulevard tracker by Howard over there in the UK, And basically, they're like little software modules that interface between the satellite tracking software and then whatever kind of tracker you're using to interface it. And it's all pre-programmed. The hardest thing to get working is calibrating your rotor to the interface. I had a little trouble with it because there's a couple different options for does your rotor steer through north or does it steer through south? Is it 180 degrees, 360 or 450, and does it do like just a 90 degrees of elevation, or will it flip all the way over and do 180? So it honestly took me 4 or 5 times to get it to track right, and I would just let it sit here in my room, and I could manually enter a number, and then I'd see that it would go and then stop on the number. So that's just about the hardest thing. The nice thing about the lab jack is if you're not going to use it for this and you're going to use it for other things, you have that option if you're a programmer. It's a pretty cool little device. It's labjack.com, I think. I made a link to it right here on my page, so you can check that out. Good to hear you, Bennett. I'll KO2OK, N3CRT. Thanks.
Okay, Charlie.
Charlie, thank you very much. To answer the question, I've been through your site and the LabJack site. Thanks again. Back to net. KO2, okay.
Okay, any other comments for Charlie?
KF2ID. I have a general comment. Let me drop out of it. Did you get me?
Go ahead, Ben.
I have a general comment. If you're watching your pennies, you might know that the bearer will provide 50% of the cost of any kit that is built during kit night. So you might keep this in mind if you have any future kits that you want to build in this or any other area. And of course, you have to be available kit night. That's the only catch in the deal. KF2ID.
Yeah, that is a good point. Tech night, or kid night, I should say, is held during the school year when school is in session at Westwood High School in Washington Township, Tuesday nights. And golly gee, I wonder when I'll ever get there. But anyway, I have a permanent commitment to my Boy Scout troop on Tuesday nights, so I can never come, which is kind of a bummer. But hey, what do you do? Can't do everything. I wish I could. In any case, Charlie, thank you very much for this. Really inspiring, as you said. That's quite a nice board to go interface to, and beautiful software from Eric, DK1 Tango Bravo. In any case, at this time, we're going to try our Simplex NSSB experiment, and what I want to do is I'm going to take two lists at one time. Stations wishing to log into FM or SSB, either way, and I'll give the frequency when the time comes, just need to come in and tell me whether they're going to be checking in on FM Simplex or SSB or both. And simple FM, SSB, FM, SSB only, FM only. That's all I need. And I'll quickly roll down the list and see who wants to participate in that at this time. WITW, KTBAR?
Both.
Okay, very good. W4DSA? Daniel? KM3CRT?
Both.
And S2K?
I can do both.
And J1W?
I only have FM.
No problem. Harvey?
2 meters sideband.
You're not going to do simplex?
No. Don't have it on the radio.
Got it. Okay. K2AMI? K2AMI.
He usually checks out about 9:30 to tuck the kids in.
Well, that's correct. KC2QIM.
Simplex FM only.
Got it. KO2 okay?
Both, if it doesn't last past 10 o'clock.
It won't. Watch this. WB2HID. KF2ID.
Both.
W2JEK.
2 meter FM only.
Okay, gentlemen, here's the procedure we're going to use. I'm going to give you a frequency, you're going to QSY to it. I'm going to call you, you're going to respond. What I'd like you to do is write down the calls of the stations you hear. We'll come back here briefly, we'll recap that, and we'll do. I'll give you the FM frequency, and then from there I'll give you both frequencies now. We'll just set it up, and we'll do one after the other, and we'll come back here and keep a log of who you could hear, and that's what we want to establish. The FM frequency is 146.535, 146.535, simplex, and the sideband frequency is 144.130. 144.130. Now, I must confess, in order to be reasonable here, I'm going to be vertically polarized for both, but my antenna is reasonably good and everybody's pretty close in, so I'm not terribly worried about it. So at this time, QSY to 146-535, I will call you, and anyone who's not participating will get to listen here on the repeater. I will be transmitting the whole roll call, or each of the two roll calls, onto the repeater from a handy-talkie, so you'll get to hear a little bit of it. And then we'll come back here and commiserate as available. So, on that note, this is K2BAR.
W2AKR, repeater.
Okay.
Copied FM only.
everyone with S9 except for Peter QIM. I didn't hear at all. And Don JEK was S7.
Very fine. Harvey?
Well, I copied WITW and NJ1W and W2TTT or K2BAR perfectly. No problem.
That was entertaining, wasn't it? Okay, very good. But you had no gaps? You could hear everybody?
I heard everyone without any problem. Maybe I have some good antenna. But it was all right. I like this experiment. It's something different on the Technic.
Comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, you hear the people you hear, so you write down the call, but, you know, maybe not everybody wrote down the call because you said their call. So he heard the people that gave their call.
Well, okay, we'll get to that in a second. KF2ID, did you hear everybody I called?
No, I didn't do well on FM. I think about the only one I heard was W2JEK. Now, on single sideband, I must have heard most of them. I had operator problems, a little sleep night. And I wasn't fast enough, I wasn't tuned properly, but I heard them. I know that they were definitely there. So I did get most of the people on the single sideband.
Okay, very fine. And Don, last but not least, W2JEK, K2BAR.
K2BAR in the group W2JEK. I heard everybody. And just as a for instance, I'm using a Linko handy talkie here with about 5 watts output to a ground plane antenna. And you know where my house is on the hill here in River Edge. And just for a thought on this thing, one time during a contest, I worked K3YTL out there at Wilkes-Barre on 2 meter FM with a 5 watt handy talkie using this antenna. So it was a rough contact, but we did make it. And give you an idea what the capabilities of Simplex can be. Back to net.
Yeah, and they're greatly enhanced by K3YTL. I mean, a yellow traffic light. Oh, yes. Okay, I have one question for anyone who might have been listening on the repeater for all or part of that. Other than the tuning issue on sideband, was the acoustic coupling adequate for the purpose of just communicating what happened on the net?
This is Casey from QIM. You missed me on the roll call.
Oh, I'm sorry, Peter. Everybody was talking about you, so much I dropped you. QIM, K2BAR, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so far I have a sort of a failing or marginal report card for most people, and that's understandable. But I'll tell you, I jotted down all on FM, I jotted down all the calls that you mentioned. And there was nothing heard on WI2W. I did not hear NJ1W. And I did not hear KF2ID. Those are the three stations that participated that I did not hear. Over.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's telling. I'm just wondering, did anyone listen on the repeater side to this rapid roll call? I'm kind of curious how that came out on the repeater.
I heard the tail end of it. It was sort of crackling.
Yeah, in order to minimize interference, I basically used about 50 milliwatts into a shortened wire antenna in the on a handy talkie. But okay, well, we can work on getting a stable antenna environment that's not going to desense. But I had no perceptible desense on either part of the band, which was surprising considering where I was transmitting. But anyway. Well, thank you very much. I thought that was an interesting thing to do. We'll consider in future weeks maybe doing that on 6 meters. I'm thinking about 6 meters for next week, and maybe not in 2 weeks, but maybe in 3. We'll think about 446 and or 222 FM. So sharpen up your gear, guys. We'll see how it goes. Nice to have a long check-in list tonight for that. Any other comments about the rapid roll call that people would like to make at this time before we have any other topics of interest to anybody? And then we'll wrap up the net. But there's no pressure to stop whenever people are done. Any other comments about the rapid roll call? Please call K2BAR.
Comment,
Joe?
Yeah, this is N3CRT. I just thought it was funny. The light bulb came into my head that only on FM could I not hear Steve, WICW, and at the same time he could not hear me. But on sideband, he sounded fine. I didn't write down a number. Wait, did we do... Yeah. On sideband, he was very weak. It was weird how we could hear one in one mode and not in the other.
You know, I'm not too terribly surprised given the signal-to-noise ratio requirements of FM during a versus sideband. So that's pretty good. Steve, did you want to comment?
Yeah, on FM you need a minimum amount of signal strength to capture, to get the FM capture effect, and our signal levels were just too low to cross that threshold. But on sideband you don't need that, so that's why it's an electronics detection problem. The only comment I have in general, Gordon, is maybe give a little bit more time for setup in between modes and before starting the roll call, because I had to, you know, punch in frequencies and change offsets and change modes and do stuff manually, so it was a race to get there. So that would be my only comment. It was a lot of fun. Enjoyed it. Thanks.
Comment. Go ahead, Dick. Don, I'm sorry, Dick. Don, sorry.
Okay, this is W2JK. Yeah, one thing that I did do here is I took the scopes down to the bottom of the radio. So if somebody had the scopes turned up, might not have heard a weak signal. That's one thought. Also, involved with the sideband stations. I don't have a sideband station, but I know other guys probably have it hooked up to a beam antenna. If that's what they're using, that's directional, and somebody could be in the know of a beam or something like that that could cause possible problems. They're usually not a sideband. It's usually a Yagi of some sort that's not usually a very omnidirectional device, whereas most FM antennas are. It's a consideration, too. Maybe the way to do this sometime is to arrange a test where people are using a vertical antenna. If they could mount up the sideband onto a... onto a vertical, that would make me have a young omnidirectional effect for people. Back to net, W2JK.
Check out.
Good, Peter.
Gordon, thank you very much, and gentlemen, it was a pleasure experimenting, and thank you very much for everybody answering questions and such, and Jim will have to stay in touch. I'm going to wait for the doctor to make his house call, Mr. WB2GAI, and I'll go from there with you. 73, everybody. KC2QYM is clear. See you next week.
Comment.
Jim, go ahead. 73, Pete.
Very good, Peter. I'll try to remember to put those in the back of the car, so wherever I am is where they'll be. Anyway, in general, I found very good signal strength on everybody except for Peter on FM. Which is weird because he's not that far from me. On sideband, I was able to hear everybody, but the signal strength generally was much lower, or at least the perceived signal strength was much lower. And of course, Gordon, you were very strong, and Bennett was very strong. Everybody else was down quite a ways. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my MFJ and look at the antenna, which is a gain vertical diamond thing that's up about the base of it's about 20 feet above the ground. So I'll check that and see if it's flat down. Yeah, it has good SWR down at the bottom of the band, but who knows what the pattern is. At the bottom of the band, it may be tilted way up or way down as well. NS2K.
Good evening.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. A couple of things. I took one look at my SWR and went, yikes. It was pretty horrendous. I cut back, I think my transmitter cut back to about 40 watts from 100, so pretty aggressive. I don't remember what the severe was, but it's probably in the neighborhood of 2-1 or more. So it's not good for these solid-state radios. That's why I was keeping my transmission short, too. So I'll have to think about an omni horizontal antenna, which I have plenty of them. Steve, to your point about time switching modes, it hits you particularly hard because you're the top of the list. So as fast as I could move, and I wasn't happy with how fast I moved, in case you're wondering, you were going to have to respond very quickly. You did fine, and Bennett was kind enough to note that I was off frequency. So thanks, Bennett, for that. And let's see, the general quality of the signals was just fine, actually. All around, I could hear just about everybody really well. Peter was a little reduced, but he was by no means weak in any on FM. I'm close enough to him. You know, Bergen's with the Tenafly, it's no big deal. Although, Jim, to your point, I think I was surprised he wasn't stronger. And what else? I think that was about it. In any case, I'll work on an omni-vertical. I think next week we'll try 6-meter sideband and 52.525 if people have either. So keep that in mind. And maybe for a future week, we'll do FM only, but we'll do 222 and 446. Now, 223.5 and 446, we'll do those together. We won't do it every week. You know, rapid roll call is not something we'll do every week, but since we have some leisure time here in the summer, it's a good thing to do. And I think maybe, you know, once or twice a month, we'll do one to keep everybody's readiness level up for simplex communication should we ever lose the repeater. I do want to remind people that the Bauer simplex frequency, last I checked anyway, was 146.535, and if it's not, certainly the Bergen County simplex frequency for Aries and I think maybe even Races, should that ever be activated. So any other comments about the rapid roll call before we move on?
KF2 ID. I want to second the comment about giving a little more time with switching from single to single sideband. Also a question. What was the FM frequency simplex used? Maybe I wrote it down. Was it 146.535 or 146.530?
535, Ben.
Okay, well, my transceiver, when I go on FM, goes in 10 kilohertz steps, so, but I heard you anyways, I was 530, or maybe possibly I might have contributed to my not hearing other people on FM. Zero, I think FM stations are normally based 10 kilohertz apart to prevent interference, but maybe I'm wrong there.
Well, actually, the standard simplex frequencies in this area are 146.52, 146.535, 55, 565, and 58. Then 147.51, 525, 54, 555, which is, by the way, also the AWRL bulletin frequency, and the 5 kHz frequency, and 57. So, the 146 and 147 megahertz spectrum is on a 15 kilohertz raster, so you will need to change your step. If you just program your radio, you can change the step, I'm sure, from 10 kilohertz to 5 kilohertz and solve this problem, and you'll be fine. So that's something else too good to know, I guess, because there are a lot of opportunities to use a 5 kilohertz raster frequency. The 145 per meg repeater section is all 10 KC raster, and actually the repeaters are on 20 KC raster, actually. So, anything else we can help everybody with regarding rapid roll call K2BAR? Okay, before we close the net, and we don't have to if there are other topics of interest, let's see if anybody has any questions or comments they'd like to add. Before we do so, this is K2BAR. Okay, just want to remind everybody that there's also another website that I don't have it here, unfortunately. I want to say it's KB2NJL or IJL. He is, been kind enough to record our sessions, our net sessions, from the third net on, and that's really cool. I believe tonight is the 15th session of our net, and they've been getting better all the time, it's been rather good. I want to thank the Bergen County FM Association, our brother and sister club, for the use of their repeaters here on 146.79, 443.100, and also 444.100. The club is in the process of putting together a new 2-meter repeater, commercial repeater. It's going to cost a few bucks, so encouraging people to join if they have not and support the repeater. It is a separate club. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association runs nets on Monday night on 28350 upper sideband, hosted by K2ZO. Drop it. And we also run one on Tuesday night with the net control of KC2KIS, Andrew, on 443.100, and also here on 79, run by Ben on Wednesday night, and 146.79, and of course the TechNet here on 146.79 as well on Thursday night. All nets for the Bergen Amateur Radio Association start at 9 p.m. And I also want to give a plug for a couple other nets. And I'm drawing a blank on when the Red Cross net is. I think the Red Cross net is the last. I don't know when it is. I'm drawing a blank here. But I think the first Monday of the month, the Aries net is here on 79 at 7:30. And that's a good thing to get involved in as well. So everybody go home. As Bob, WB2AIU, would say, charge your batteries. Make sure that they actually are charged, you have a spare set, you have all the connectors and things you need to operate the radio for a sustained period, and maybe with marginal conditions. Make sure you have your antenna connections and your coaxes to go, all bagged and tagged and ready to move, along with maybe a snack and some water, maybe some weather gear, should you be caught in the weather. And of course, if you have a home situation, please consider checking on your antennas, as Jim is, based on this little exercise tonight. Glad to be of service, Jim. So, last comments before I close the net. This is K2BAR.
I think you're doing a marvelous job. KC2AWX.
Okay, now that I got my shill out of the way, anybody else have any comments? Thank you, Harvey. Okay, well, thank you very much. It has been a pleasure. I want to thank WI2W, W4DSA, N3CRT, NS2K, NJ1W, KC2AYX, otherwise known as Gordon Schill, K2AMI, KC2QIM, KO2OK, WB2HID, KF2ID, W2JEK, and this is your host, W2, Tango, 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 operating K2BAR, securing station and returning the repeater to normal amateur use. Thank you very much.